This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Jackie Sayers.
Robin Coleman.
And I'm Stuart Birks. One thing that struck me coming here from Britain was that in Britain, if you've got a garden, you get it set up in spring, you enjoy it in summer, dies back in autumn, forget it over winter. But I came here... You set it up in spring, enjoy it over summer, it races away again in autumn. So did you now, if you're in farming and country and stuff, that would have been even more striking for you, wouldn't it?
I think so. Although, I think coming from Cornwall, things grow longer. Ah.
Was the climate more like New Zealand, do you think?
It was a bit colder, but it is, yes, it's more temperate than it is, because you've got a lot of sea, because it comes down.
Yeah. Did you have the two growing seasons that we have here then, in this part of New Zealand anyway?
Yeah, I think so. Although, everything grew more or less all the year round. Maybe the winter everything slowed down.
Okay,
But because you don't quite get the heat... that
you get here. The drier summer where things slow here and then speed up again.
Okay. It rains.
Yes. Yeah. So are you a gardener too? Yeah.
A gardener all down the drive is what I do.
Okay. So how is that something, you were doing that as well in Cornwall and you found any changes or you could do similar things?
No, we didn't have much gardening in Cornwall.
Okay.
It was too stony really.
Okay.
But it's something that I've got to do more and more of.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And the New Zealand plants and so on, are they?
A lot of them are similar though. But I guess because I've worked, since I've been here, I've worked in plant nurseries growing different plants. Just something... It's an itch, I guess, because when I came here, I said I didn't want much garden.
Yeah, and you gradually get.
Well, I'll just do.
A bit here and a bit there. Yeah, I think things do tend to grow quite well here. I think. What about you, Jackie? Are you a gardener?
I was, but I'm not now because I can't manage it. But I certainly have been in the past. It was like, particularly my veggie garden. But I can't do it now.
Yeah, but I was going to say there does seem to be a strong trend in New Zealand, or there was, for people growing their own vegetables, especially in farming areas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got vegetables. Yeah.
You're growing your own now?
Yeah. That's what I miss, actually, not being able to do my veggie garden. I've got a few vegetables, but my daughter does it for me now, but yeah.
Well, you know you can sprout beans and peas and things in a couple of days.
I know.
Willow sticks.
I'll have to rethink that. I've still got the equipment.
I find that very good for young children because they don't have the patience, probably the idea of waiting several weeks or months for something, but to get results in a few days. Yeah. Okay, so both of you came to New Zealand... I'm thinking of you, Jackie. What happened when you arrived here?
When I arrived here, my husband met me and he saw his daughter for the first time for 10 months. So that was interesting, getting the bonding, going. Mm. She toddled from me to her father up in the botanical gardens in Wellington and didn't toddle back. No, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but...
Yeah.
But I used to talk about David all the time while she was a baby, and we used to have his photograph.
Yeah.
So she bonded to her dad, and we went to we flew up, and it'd be the first time I'd been in an aeroplane, so we would have flown from Paraparaumu up to Auckland.
Yeah.
And then my husband took me out to Muriwai, to our first home, which was a little batch about the size of this part here.
Yeah, about
which had a dunny up the back.
Yeah.
Behind the bamboo, and tank water, and it was underneath a puhutakaua tree, and I had a washing line between two knee cow palms. Mm. And he said to me, "Come with me," and I followed him through the bush, and he parted the bush, and I looked out onto the Tasman Sea.
Mm-hmm.
I was so romantic. And it was very, very nice living there in the summer, but it was very damp in the winter and very cramped.
Yeah. So what was your first impression seeing a batch like that? Were you expecting
our first home together.
Ah, okay.
So in that way, it was. I had a little camp stove for cooking.
Yeah.
My husband had bought me a washing machine and a fridge.
Hmm.
Because he'd been told by his colleagues in the Air Force that if you don't buy her some modern equipment, she'll go back on the boat back to England. So I had my first fridge and my first washing machine.
Yeah.
So it was then Muriwai was along a stony road, you know, metal road out to the beach. Mm. So the place was full of immigrant Air Force people living there, because housing was atrocious in the 50s. It was hard to find anywhere decent to live.
So there was a lot of houses close by?
We were in the bush, so there would have been houses, but I couldn't see them. But they were dotted around, and they were batches in those days.
So how did people feel? I mean, these days people want, you know, as a first home, a brand new double glazed three bedroom with bathroom and ensuite and so on.
This was real batch country then.
So what do you had a bathroom and shower in?
I had a bath, and my husband ran me the bath my first night in New Zealand, and he said, "Are you enjoying the bath?" And I said, "Yes, it's lovely." Because we hadn't had any fresh water.
There was a bathroom, was there?
Oh, there was a bathroom, and I had a bath, and he said, "That's the last bath you're going to get, because we're on tank water."
Okay.
And I'm pretty certain we didn't. I can't remember a shower. So we must have managed somehow with tops and bottoms, I suppose, most of the time.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it was a proper bath, not a tin bath?
No. That was England with a tin bath. You know, it was a proper bath, yes.
Okay.
I remember that.
So that felt good, was it?
We only had salt water, you see, on the boat.
Ah, yeah.
So it was difficult to have a bath. We had showers, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my luxury.
Yeah, okay. So when you were writing back to family in England, were you saying, "This is wonderful," or...?
Oh, well, the romance lasted about a couple of years, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, okay.
To the reality of one bus a week from Auckland to Muriwai.
Yes.
And I didn't drive.
Yeah.
And I was left at home in Muriwai on my own with two babies and
no communication.
It was pretty lonely.
What about shopping?
I think we used to go... Friday night, we'd go into Helensville. We went somewhere up there. I can't remember which place we'd go now.
Okay.
We'd go to probably a Four Square store.
Yeah.
There was a local store, you know, like a dairy.
Yeah.
But I think we used to go once. We would have gone out shopping.
So you were doing all your own bread making and... preserves and things like that?
I wouldn't have been making bread, but I was certainly cooking.
Yeah.
I can't remember it all now. David may have picked up stuff on the way, but there were so many Air Force people living out at Muriwai that there was a bus.
Okay.
And so one of the Kiwis had the bus, and he would pick up all the servicemen, and then they'd go into Hobsonville and Whenuapai.
Yeah.
And they'd do their job, and then they'd come home at night, and they'd stop at the Huapai pub.
Yeah.
For the
is this the six,
5 o'clock? 5 to 6, yes. So then the men would all arrive home, slightly inebriated.
Yeah. Now, the story, the 6 o'clock swill, was it terrible?
Sorry?
Now, so sometimes they talk about the 6 o'clock swill and wasn't it terrible and drunken men coming home and beating their wives.
My husband never came home drunk,
yeah.
But they stopped because the bus driver stopped, so everybody got out. And they would
he had a few drinks and then...
Oh, yeah, he would have had a beer or two. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But not noticeable, you know, from that point of view. But it was, so that happened every weekday when they came home.
Yeah. Did that seem strange to you, the idea of a 6 o'clock swill?
Oh, absolutely. I was, the services was awash with alcohol, which I didn't like. So I'm a non-drinker.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But you would have been used from England to the pub culture, though.
Absolutely.
Which is far more sort of, disciplined. I mean, the English pub compared to the drinking barns in New Zealand is quite different.
Absolutely. Women couldn't go in pubs in those days.
In Britain, you mean?
In New Zealand.
In New Zealand, yeah.
Yeah,
they were great big barns rows of about 10 or 20.
I never went in, but David told me that the men were served with hoses and there was sawdust on the floor.
Ah, yeah.
I think it was about the 60s when it became a little bit more...
You get jugs of beer and things. Yeah.
But, I mean, I grew up with pubs. I live next door to a pub.
Yeah.
And I, in England, and I never saw drunkenness
they were totally
in England
different.
Like I saw in New Zealand.
Yeah, it was all sort of, in winter, the fireplace and people sitting around and just socialising.
Yes,
and
that was my memory. Yeah. When I've gone back to England, the first time I went back, my family said, "What do you want to do, Jack?" I said, "I want to go to a pub." So I did miss, the English pubs,
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Where there wasn't the pressure. If you had a lemonade, you had a lemonade,
yes,
you know?
Yes, yeah.
You went there for the social part of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Just to mention the dancing, David and I had been in New Zealand a very short time. We were living at Murawai, and we were told there was a dance down at the, the club that looked, the life-saving club.
Oh, the surf lifesaving. Yeah.
Yes, there was dance on. So surf I put on my gear, like I would in England, and David put on his suit or whatever he did, and we went down, and we were the only ones dressed. The rest of them were all in shorts and T-shirts or whatever they were, and flip-flops, you know.
Yeah.
There's David and I dancing around, you know, doing our foxtrots and quicksteps. That was my introduction to New Zealand dance.
Yeah.
It was a little bit different.
And how about now, for you, the social life, Robin, was that very different from being in England then? You were more going from more of a, was it village or town to the country lifestyle in New Zealand?
Not really. I mean, I had the 2 young children.
Yeah, yeah.
No family here, so you know, it was more school things, and I mean, if you went somewhere, the children went too.
Yeah,
you'd have social evenings, and the children all went, and you'd find that they'd drop off to sleep, and you know, you might take a blanket or a pillow, and they'd be in a corner somewhere having a snooze, and then you'd pick them up and take them home.
Now, I mean, given your work in the hotels in England, did that seem strange? You know, if the parents would go to dinner with the children asleep in the rooms and so on, did you find it different here?
Really?
No?
I don't know whether I'm...
Oh, you just took it, that's how it was?
You just go with the flow,
what you do.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And do what everybody else is doing, and that's what people did.
Yeah. What was your impression with children going to school here, and obviously you went to school in England, did you think they were very similar, or?
think the actual schooling itself was similar, but of course totally different, because I went to school in a big brick building where they had boys and girls, but they were different floors and different playgrounds. You never saw each other, didn't you?
Oh, okay. And that's even at the primary school age, seven,
eight.
The
hardest thing when I came here was the fact that the children didn't have shoes. You know, you'd send them to school, being me, with shoes and socks on, and they never came home with shoes and socks on because everybody ran around bare feet.
Yeah, a lot would head out from home, hide their shoes under their heads, and go to school.
And they'd never come home with them on. They were always in the bag.
Yeah.
Actually, as the school they went to was really good, the head teacher, we also had to supply some sort of slippers for the children.
Yes.
And they stayed at school.
Yes.
And when they got to school, they wore the slippers in the classroom so they didn't get all muddy and dirty.
Oh, yeah. Because the feet were all muddy, you mean? Yeah.
Well, I've got somewhere photos of the children moving from the old school, which was sort of like a single building, into the new school that's there now in Glenora.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you would have noticed as well then, if they were going around in bare feet, that the soles of their feet would be quite different from yours when you were young. Because they'd be toughened up a lot.
Toughened up. I mean, they would run around outside all the time with nothing on their feet.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the end, you just accept it. I mean, I do the same myself now.
It's quite cool. Well, I've got a friend who does say that it's actually very good for your health to have your feet in touch with the grass and so on. So maybe it's beneficial.
So they say. When they get muddy feet, and because they're tromping inside, because trying to get kids to stop and wipe their feet
Impossible. Well, what about cutting their feet and so on? Thorns in their feet? Anything else?
No.
Their feet were so tough it wouldn't happen.
Oh, I guess so.
They didn't seem to cut their feet. Yeah. Mm. Okay. And you just accept, this is different from England, so that's what they do? Or?
Forever sat and wears your shoes and socks.
They
used to go off with their white socks up to the knees.
School uniform was white socks?
No
school uniform.
No, we didn't have school uniform.
Yeah.
It was just the thing at the time.
Yeah.
White socks.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it varied over the years, and then it becomes ankle socks. Luckily, they were always in their bag when they came home.
Okay. And what was your experience with your children and schooling then?
Well, it was a bit more difficult for me in a sense. I'd like to comment on the bare feet, because I'd only been here weeks and we were driving and it was raining and there were children coming along the road and they were all barefoot. And as we passed, we passed them in the car, and I said to my husband, I thought you told me that everybody was, was well off or okay in New Zealand. Look at those poor children, they've no shoes. Mm-hmm. Because in England, bare feet was poverty.
Yes.
And I had to come to terms with that.
Yeah.
In terms of schooling for my children, I moved 15 times in 15 years. The first 15 years I was in New Zealand. So we had a succession of schools. So it wasn't until I came to live in New Zealand, in Fielding, in 1973... that I've lived anywhere for any length of time in New Zealand.
Okay.
So those school years were a little bit hazy in terms of the children.
Okay. Now that's the issue as well, isn't it, of service children and all the school changes. Did it
have a
big effect on the children?
Yeah, well, it wasn't so much the service, it was partly the service, I suppose, but also my husband changed his job and we were looking, for different things that happened, and we eventually ended up, we moved from 15 different places, sometimes only for 10 days, it was still a move with all the family and all the gear,
And the children were changing school regularly.
At one school, they were only out for 10 days before we shifted again. But it's a matter of interest. It didn't make any difference to their achievements in terms of...
Is that because the home environment, you're emphasising education? Or?
Yeah, my eldest daughter had 7 primary schools.
Yeah.
But she still did well, so, you know...
About making friends? And
it was very difficult because I was never had the opportunity to make any long-term friendships or any join anything because I was constantly moving.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I came to live in Fielding that I began to be able to put some roots down.
Yeah.
So when I arrived, I said to my husband, I'm not moving again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm still in the same house.
Yeah. And for the children as well, though, they'd have to make new friends. Or does that mean they're very good at it, or they don't see friends
probably,
in the same way?
We lived in Gisborne and Wairau for a number of years, so 2 of my children are in Hawke's Bay now, and one of them is partnered from someone from Wairau.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that link there. And the 4 children are still in New Zealand. So, yeah, I think that's probably helped with them too.
Yeah.
And they've kept friendships from, you know, more their teenage years.
Oh, that's good. So do they talk much about the effect on them of changing school so much?
No, except my daughter uses her example of the fact that when you say that if you keep changing schools, it's bad for you. She says, well, I do all right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So what is she doing now?
She's a professional advisor for social work and Hawke's Bay Hospital Board.
Okay, yeah.
As well as working with the elderly like me.
Ah, yes. Okay. So for both, you came to Fielding in 1973?
73, yeah.
And you actually came to this area earlier than that?
In 63.
Yeah, when we arrived.
Yeah, okay. Never really gone far out of the Fielding area.
Okay. So I'll ask both of you your impressions of this area when you came here. What did you feel? You just, Robin, you just take everything as it comes. So this is here we are, and
so
that's
we
it.
Live. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we probably went to Palmerston more than Fielding.
Okay.
From out there.
Yes, because you were Glenarua, you said. Mm, were you?
Yeah. We had friends in Palmerston that. Actually, the woman went to school with my husband in Cornwall.
Oh, okay.
So we knew them.
Yeah.
So we sort of went there, and I'd go and I'd do the shopping, and, and we'd go down and visit.
Yeah.
And then come home again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Yeah. I just seemed to be able to.
It just was fine. Yep.
If this is where I'm going to live, then...
Make the most of it, which is a good philosophy. And for you, Jackie, it's, finally you've got a stable base and this has what you're looking for in a community, is that?
Well, yes, it was partly that. My husband eventually became a school teacher at Wairau College and I wanted to do something different for my life, so he got a job here at Fielding Ag.
Oh, Fielding Ag, yeah.
And so that I could go to university when I was 36, 37.
Okay.
So that's basically the reason why we moved here.
So you got more qualified than him in the end, did you?
Academically, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So you went to university and you studied what?
To find out more about the country that I had chosen to live in.
Okay.
And I think I enrolled for a degree in history and found that I was unable to study history as a major, New Zealand history as a major, because it wasn't available in the 70s.
Ah, okay.
So that was my, what is this country?
Yeah.
What is it about? So that's why I went. But I also wanted to be a teacher, so I wanted to find a way into something like that. Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so you would have been at Massey in one of its early days as a university then?
Sorry?
You would have gone to Massey in its early days as a university. It was the late 60s, I believe.
No, not in 73 I went.
Yeah, you went 73.
Yeah.
So was it very large then? Were there many students?
Well, an older a person on campus in 1973 was very unusual, yes. because most of them were 18, 19, 20.
Yeah.
So adult students as internal students was unusual.
They had the distance students then?
They did do, yes.
Okay.
But yeah. I enrolled as a...
As an internal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 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 Mm.
Okay.
So that was my first experience at university.
And having left school so much earlier, was it... was it because of your age you could go straight to university?
Yes, yes.
And so was it a major adjustment?
Well, it was learning... yes, it was, in the sense that I had to learn how to regurgitate what the lecturers wanted back, not what I wanted to say.
Okay.
So I had to learn...
With hindsight, was that how to give them something useful and structured?
I had to learn how to write an essay and stuff okay. like that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the mechanics of it, really.
Yeah. That's what they often say. The first year of university might seem hard because you're learning how to study and structure your thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, but you found it satisfying, rewarding.
Oh, yes. I spent seven years as an undergrad student at Massey, and I might say it was the best time of my life.
7 years? Because you kept changing subject? You made sure you didn't finish a whole degree?
I finished my history degree.
Yeah.
And I applied for teaching... But they didn't want me because nobody was interested in teaching history.
Okay.
So I thought, damn that, I'm going to get a career. And they just started the social work degree with Merv Hancock. So joined the initial lot of students for studying social work at Massey. So I did a social work degree.
Okay. This is part 3 of 4. Tune in next week for part 4. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.